The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Yesterday we talked about the leak from Russia about an intercepted conversation between senior German military leaders. It was potentially useful information for Russia to have, so why then did they decide to release it and alert others to the possibility that they too were being surveilled by Russian intelligence? Is it all part of a broader pattern of Russian disinformation and anti-West propaganda? Well, I'm joined by expert David Robert Grimes, author of The Irrational Ape, Why Flawed Logic Puts Us All at Risk and How Critical Thinking Can Save the World, which is a great ambition. David, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
What are the Russians up to?
Well, the Russians have a long track record of this, and I think it's worth digging back into history to see it. In 1923, the Russians established an office for disinformation. Now, the word desinformatia, which we get disinformation from, arose both in English and French. But there is an argument that Stalin himself came up with the term. Now, that might be giving him too much credit, but what is true is that after the Russian Revolution, the Russians very much embraced this because it was a very cheap way to do several things. The main thing it does, if you spread rumors or misinformation around an enemy, you create internal divisions. You can find their weak points and make them divide themselves against
themselves. So, for example, if you say that General Ehrlich... from Westphalia has had dinner with the leader of the Communist Party, Stalin's Communist Party, even though it wasn't true.
That would happen.
You plant the seed and therefore Ehrlich's in trouble back home.
Absolutely.
Even though he never had dinner.
And negative information is much more keenly embraced than positive things. So one of the ideas is associative discord. In 1964, the Soviets spread rumors that prominent Western politicians were actually secret Nazis or had supported the Nazis. This wasn't true. It was called Operation Neptune. But the idea was to sow discord and make people distrust them. And it was very soon after denazification in Germany. Now, we think this has gone away. It really hasn't. Under Putin, this is intensified. It's a very cheap way to sow discord. And that's the major thing it does. But also to distract people from what you're doing.
Now, I remember the time of Glasnost and Perestroika, which was openness and reconstruction. Under Gorbachev. Now, the reconstruction continued apace. I'm not sure their economy is still what they'd like it to be, but the glasnost is gone.
Well, the big change that actually happened was around 2005 when Putin was first elected. You and I are old enough to remember that he was seen as maybe a breath of fresh air, someone that would, you know, modernize Russia and soothe over relations with the West. But after the Kursk disaster, Russian media turned on Putin, and Russian media was only very newly free. His response to that was a massive media crackdown. And it was around then that he reinvigorated the Soviet policies of active measures. This is the idea of spreading misinformation and disinformation about enemy states and undermining them from within. And very much he got control of his own media and then decided to interfere on a massive global scale. And just to give people an idea of how massive this scale is, the fingerprints of Russian disinformation were seen very obviously with the 2016 Trump election, but were also seen in the Brexit referendum. They've shown up in Irish referenda, and they may show up again, and they've shown up in the French elections. The whole idea is to sow discords and internal divisions.
So it doesn't really matter what the lie is, as long as it disrupts.
And that's the incredible thing. It's not about convincing people. It's about sowing a feeling of distrust among people. For example, during the Black Lives Matter protests in 2020, Russian state forces online had both taken very pro-Black Lives Matter positions, but all extreme ones, and then had taken very anti ones. And they were playing both sides to further engender the already big division that existed in American society.
Okay, so they actually played both sides just to create more friction, more anger.
Absolutely. For example, during the 2016 American election, you had the Never Hillary Trump, with a lot of Bernie supporters were going after. That was also pushed very heavily by the Russians, who mainly supported Trump, but were happy to sow internal divisions. They didn't want Hillary, but it was easy to play both sides against that because there was enough internal division for them to take advantage of. And that's something we have to be very cognizant of when we read things online that come from Russia.
Now, do they have their fingerprints all over the 5G conspiracy?
They do, and this is an interesting one. So back in 2018, it started initially, there was a big panic about 5G mobile internet standards. usually these new standards don't excite an awful lot of interest, but this time it was an absolutely huge protest. There was protests against rollouts in Geneva and around the world. And then at the beginning of COVID, there was a bit of misinformation that 5G itself was causing COVID-19, and over 180 arson attacks worldwide on what people perceived to be 5G towers. Actually, from early 2018, Russia were pumping a huge amount of resources into pushing this on Russia Today and their other networks, while at the same time they were investing in a 5G infrastructure that they had got from the Chinese in there. The idea again was to find these divisions, create anger in different places, and continue doing what they wanted to do in their own environment safely.
So the Chinese are now spying on them through that 5G network.
Well, weirdly enough, the Chinese have very much adopted the Russian playbook. A lot of the COVID misinformation we saw around 2020, 2021, the European Council came out and said very blatantly that both Russia and China were behind a huge amount of it. And again, it very much seems that China have copied Russia's playbook. Russia are the masters, but China has been studying this very closely.
But I'm just thinking that the Chinese installation of 5G in Russia is maybe a Trojan horse for China. They know what's going on.
It could well be, but I don't want to get too into the realms of conspiracy theory there.
Now, what about vaccination? Were they active on that front?
Because, they were.
That was a self-inflicted wound in Britain with that doctor.
Wakefield in 1998. Wakefield, yeah. Yes. So what they often do is they will often find divisions in society and exploit them. For example, back in the 60s and 70s in America, they pushed the anti-fluoride conspiracy theories and the JFK was assassination conspiracy theory. But again, vaccination is a fracture point. There's been anti-vaccine propaganda since the late 1700s. So they find that and they will exploit it. And we saw during COVID in particular, with the first rollout of the COVID vaccines, they were very much amplifying that misinformation. They weren't creating it necessarily, but they were encouraging it.
The question of their capabilities, because since the crackdown and since the war in Ukraine, for various reasons, self-interest on the part of some, they didn't want to serve at the front, but also fear of what lies ahead for Russia, for other people, emigration out of Russia of top tech people has continued apace. Now, some of them may be sleepers and spies, but many of them are just, I want out of here. How is Russia's capability? I mean, have they got a deep capability in all of this kind of stuff?
So Russia invested massively. The IRA, which is the Internet Research Agency outside St. Petersburg, is a massive permanent troll factory, as we might call it. They employ a lot of people to literally post constantly. And these are real people. They're not bots in the way we'd conventionally envision them. So they have invested massively in this. And that might sound counterintuitive, but it's really cheap. It's a very cheap way of causing division. You might look at, say, the election of Trump as you can't say that's all the internet's fault or it's all Russia's fault, but certainly they were putting a lot of their eggs in that basket. So for a relatively low investment, they have made a massive industry out of this. Industry is the wrong word here, but it's certainly something they have really been forerunners in taking control of. And we see China running up just behind them with very similar techniques.
If you can credit the Russians in contributing to the election of Trump, in contributing to Brexit, which of course was designed to fragment the EU, they obviously have their fingers in so many pies. We're going to blame them for everything, even when they're not responsible.
And that's a fair point. So there's still a lot of debate exactly how much this influences people. We know we find the fingerprints and we know they've been involved in it. Say, like the Black Lives Matter process, they were trying to amplify those divisions. We've seen it actually in Ireland as well with anti-immigrant rhetoric. Some of it is amplified by Russian sources. But the big question, which we still haven't fully answered, is how much does that influence people? Now, we have good indirect evidence that it actually quite strongly does. People see things online repeated, and that creates a thing called illusory truth or the availability heuristic. If you constantly see something, you start to accept it more readily than you would before.
And finally, David, and briefly, what stance are they taking on Gaza, Israel, Palestine?
I think they would play both sides quite happily. It's already a very divisive thing, and they will amp both up.
All right. It's fascinating and frightening stuff. But David Robert Grimes, author of The Irrational Ape, How Flawed Logic Puts Its Soul at Risk and How Critical Thinking Can Save the World. David, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.